copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I'm going to start with a poll that you can respond to. And the question is very simple. Have you ever had a coach? This is a session about how to be a gospel coach. But the poll is about, have you ever had a gospel coach? Simple answer, yes or no. Great. Well, thank you to those who have voted. And the answer is we're pretty much split down the middle. It's like a referendum in the UK. No one can really decide what they want. 51%. 50 is exactly equal. 50% of you have said, yes, we've had a coach. 50% say no. So we've all got different experiences of coaching. And in this session, what I'd like to explore with you is just how important coaching is. In fact, that it's a biblical command, I believe, to look a little bit about what the Bible says about it, and then to explore some tools. Let me just share those results with you so you can see. Have you ever had a coach? We had a few more answers that came in. Yes, 54%, no, 46%. So what we're going to try and do is explore some of what it means to be a coach, and then we're going to have a question time at the end. And just the way that these work is you'll find that you won't be able to use the chat button. If you want to ask a question, you have to use the Q&A button that you'll find on your screen. If you click on that, you can ask questions as we go, and I will perhaps be answering some of them as I go, but we'll try and bring them all together at the end. And before we do that, I want to tell you a little bit about my story. And in order to do that, I'm just going to show you a photo. You might think it's a bit odd showing you a photo, but I'll explain why I'm going to do that. So this is a very youthful me. I was on the right, that is, not on the left. I hope you appreciate that. I was a bit of a sharp dresser back in those days. This is the day that I was inducted, actually, as pastor of a local church where I served. And the man standing on my right, or on the left as you look at him, is a man called Eric Lane. You'll have never heard of him, I don't think. A wonderful, wise old man. He's still alive. He's in his 90s. In fact, he's been very severely ill. He's had coronavirus. He broke his hip, was taken into hospital and caught coronavirus in the hospital, and is just struggling at the moment to recover. So I've been praying for him very greatly. And Eric was my coach. Mentor, I guess, is another word that we could use. Except, interestingly, he would never have recognized that word. He just thought that's what you did. He had read the Bible. He had seen how people had invested in him, and he invested in me as a young pastor. In fact, he did that over a number of years. We initially had a 3-year period where he coached me, where he mentored me, and I benefited from it so much that at the end of that, I asked him if he would continue, and he continued to do that for another 7 or 8 years, so 10 or 11 years in total. What a man he was, and what a difference he made to me. Even though, in fact, he didn't really know what coaching was. He hadn't read a book on coaching, I don't think. He hadn't read a book on how to be a mentor. I don't think he'd come along to the ELF and attended a session on it. It was just part of his makeup, part of intuitively who he was. And that's because, I think, supremely, he was a Bible man. The command to promote the coach, I'll show you it in the Bible, I think, in just a moment, but the command to coach actually finds its root in the nature of God. It's a really useful thing to do, to think to ourselves about how so much of what we do and so much of what we're called to be finds itself rooted in God's nature. We're not just following the latest leadership fashion. We're not just having read a secular book and been really moved by it. We're actually rooted in who God is and what he is doing. That's what these two things are here. God's unchanging nature. God who says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He does not change. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. And through all of history, indeed, through all of eternity, God has been unchanging. And yet, he has a continuing purpose. A continuing purpose. He has a purpose for the world. History is heading somewhere. Our world is heading somewhere. And therefore, he calls us to be partners with him. It's an extraordinary phrase that Paul uses in 1 Corinthians. He calls us to be partners with him in fulfilling his purpose. He doesn't change. that the way that he equips people doesn't really change, even though the context we're ministering in changes. But he has this continuing purpose. And because he has a continuing purpose, what that means is we need generation after generation after generation of those who are serving God. So you'll forgive the little stick men and women here. I've got some better ones later on in my pictures. But in order to fulfill God's continuing purpose, he needs to use, doesn't need to, but he chooses, sorry, to use us in his service. And because there is this generational turnover, there needs to be an element of investing in each subsequent generation. So actually, we could just from first principles work out that being a coach, being someone who invests in others, we'll define it in just a moment, is something that is at the very heart of the gospel, at the very heart of who God is, and at the very heart of what God calls us to do. There's a couple of quotes that perhaps might just help make this clear. This is the first one, John Maxwell. I guess you could argue this is the reason that we hold the European Leadership Forum. John Maxwell, a very famous Christian writer on leadership, said this: everything rises and falls on leadership. And how many times have we seen that? Perhaps in your own ministries, in ministries you've observed, you've noticed that everything rises and falls on leadership. But we could add to that, and we could do it in this way: everything rises and falls on the successful transition of leadership. That's from a book called Next, Pastoral Succession That Works. And by the way, we're not really talking about pastoral succession today, but actually this is a really useful little book if you're thinking about raising up new leaders in particular, by Van der Blumen and Bird. Next, Pastoral Succession That Works. Everything rises and falls on leadership, says John Maxwell. Yes, everything rises and falls on the successful transition of leadership. Yes, we have to agree with that, because each generation needs to reacquire the gospel, if you like, to reaffirm the gospel and be trained and coached and mentored into bringing it to a new generation. So everything rises and falls on that. Let me show you how this works out and cashes out in Scripture. 2 Timothy 2, verse 2, I think is a really helpful verse. Paul is writing to one of his protégés. What you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit to faithful men who will also be able to teach others. Sorry, who will be able to teach others also. And we'll break this down in a little moment, but can you just see how there are four different generations here? Four different, if you like, let's just draw them up the right-hand side of the chart. Four different people, four different generations, yes, that are being discussed. What you have heard from me, says Paul, what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit to faithful men, it's number three, who will be able to teach others also. So do you see that? Four different generations there that Paul has in mind in terms of this kind of intergenerational taking of the baton, passing on the work. Now, you might just think, well, Paul is talking there about knowledge. What you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. A bit like passing on the family stories that you might pass on through the generations. My grandfather, I didn't know my grandfather very well, but there were lots of stories that my father told me about my grandfather, and I now tell my children. But we know that Paul is talking about something a little bit more than this because of the relationship that Paul had with Timothy. The relationship that Paul had with Timothy was not just as a teacher to a pupil. It was a coach to a trainee. And that begins to help us understand what coaching is. Coaching is helping someone get from A to B. Let me see if I can just find a page on my diagram, on my little handout, which will give me a bit more space to draw on. Here we go. So coaching is helping someone get from A to B. So let's draw point A. There's point A. Let's draw point B. There they are. A, B. Coaching is not getting from A to B. Coaching is helping In this case, my little blue man there, it's helping that person get from A to B. It's helping him release his potential. There's a very good book. I haven't put it on the chart. There's a very good book you might like to look up, written by Bob Beale, who's one of the regulars at the European Leadership Forum. It's simply called Mentoring. And he talks about mentoring being something that helps people realize their potential. That is getting them to point B. So coaching is not actually doing the work ourselves, but it is enabling someone to get from A to B. So it would include elements of training. It would include elements of teaching. It would include elements of encouraging and correcting, all those kinds of things. But it's the whole package. It's not simply a few elements of it. It's the whole package. And it's done over time and with a relationship. That's absolutely key. So coaching then is helping someone to get from A to B. Let's go back to our little charts. I think this is quite an interesting quote. This is from another useful book. Again, this is actually a book about how to change from one pastor to another. And the name of the book is called The Elephant in the Boardroom. And if you can't quite see that chart that's on the screen, it's called the subtitle, How to Think About and Create a Strategic Succession Plan for Your Church. Now, by the way, if that's a subject you're interested in, let me just write here the name. My autocorrect's going mad. Crabtree. Those are the two authors. So if you want to know the two authors, Weiss and Crabtree. I'm getting a bit carried away with myself. I'd already put it there, hadn't I? I'd already put it there, so you know who they are. And this is the point they make in this very helpful book. When they talk about coaching, they say the people who genuinely sound like Jesus on this issue are not in the church, but in business. They're not in the church, but in business. In other words, the business world really has embraced coaching, as you would see it in the Bible, in a way that the church has failed to do. Now, you might want to take issue with that. Perhaps you think that's overstating the case a little bit. But I think they make a very interesting point. So let's have a little think about this in terms of the example of coaching. How did Jesus coach? Right. Thank you very much for your answers. Great. Great stuff. Now, isn't that interesting? I've just put up there. I've typed in as we've gone some of the answers that people have come up with. I'm sorry I didn't get them all up there, but I hope those captured most of them. And can you see how, I mean, if you were to read a secular book on coaching, and by the way, because this was one question, I think coaching and mentoring are probably interchangeable terms. You probably can split them apart if you wanted to. But actually, I'm just using them as interchangeable terms. So how did Jesus coach? By all of these means. He taught people, he invested in them, he questioned them when they came back from being sent out. He listened to them, he invested time in them. Sometimes he worked with three, sometimes he worked with 12, sometimes he worked with larger groups. Someone said apprenticeships. I think you probably could describe in some ways what Jesus was doing as an apprenticeship. I don't think he actually formally said to anybody, this is an apprenticeship, but that's exactly what was going on. That's all of those are right answers. And that little book, which said the business world has embraced this, is exactly right. If you were to go back to the business world, you would see all of these things in terms of coaching mentality. And I think that's very interesting. Jesus actually, I think, is a great model for coaching. I think that's why the Bible commands us to invest in others in this way. It's not a management tool. Jesus sent people out. He let them get on with it. But he invested in them. Perhaps that's the best way of describing them. He helped get them from A to B. You could look at that a slightly different way. Let's think about the example of Paul. We're not going to do the same exercise now, but we don't know so much about how Paul trained people because we're not told so much about it. We hear a lot of, but in Acts of the Apostles, the relationship of Acts to Paul is not the same as a relationship of the Gospels to Jesus. You get Jesus' teaching, you get Paul's teaching. You don't get so much about how Paul related to others, but you do get some very interesting insights. And you particularly get some interesting insights in how he related to Timothy. Timothy was the person, of course, to whom 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy were written. By then, he was the pastor of Ephesus. We first meet him in Acts 16, where, and this will make every man's eyes water, in order to go along with Paul, he had to be circumcised. Came from a Greek background, and Paul was keen that he would find some credibility amongst the Jewish brothers that he was going to serve. I don't think, by the way, that that's the first lesson to take away from coaching, just in case you're worried. But here's an interesting thing about Timothy. We don't quite know, because Acts doesn't really give us too many time markers, but we think that Timothy was with Paul about 7 years, something like that, about 7 years. And what's interesting about that is it fits into three sections. It fits into three sections. And section one is when Timothy is very clearly with Paul. He's very clearly with Paul. They're in the same place a lot. He's learning from him. There's a very close relationship with them. Then as you move through the book of Acts, you discover that Timothy is left behind. So as Paul begins to trust him, and as Paul has developed him, what happens is that Paul goes on to new places and Timothy is left behind. Which is a great way, by the way, to train someone, to coach them, is to give them something that is already up and running and let them develop that a bit further. And then towards the end of Acts, you discover that Paul actually sends Timothy ahead. So he's with him, part one, and then he's left behind, part two, and then he's sent ahead. And that is part of the coaching technique of Paul, that as he invests in Timothy, as he sees him progress from A to B, he gives him extra responsibilities. Now, the relationship with Paul and Timothy is complicated, because Paul was effectively Timothy's boss, and you can be coached by your boss. It's quite possible. I happen to think that for most of us, it's useful to have a coach who's outside of our immediate structure. So the relationship with Timothy is slightly more complicated, perhaps, than it might be for us. But you see in that pattern, basically a diminishing involvement that Paul has with Timothy. So let's write it this way. Here are Paul and Timothy together. Let me see if I can just think about how to draw it on a graph. Here's time. And here is the amount of involvement that Paul has with Timothy. And it obviously starts off very high. He's within the whole time. But as that relationship develops, that tails off as Timothy becomes more adept. I guess when he's leaving him behind, that's in this sort of kind of region. He's with him. He sees the establishment of a work and then he continues it on. But by the time he's sent ahead by Paul, I think you're down here. Paul is having to invest a lot less in him until you actually get to when Timothy is pastor of Ephesus and Paul's coaching of Timothy is actually the pastoral epistles. So it's very interesting to think about 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy actually as being Paul's coaching of Timothy. Is encouraging him, is rebuking him, he's giving him some tips. They're very personalized, they're related to him. And so actually, I think one of the ways to read 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy essentially is as coaching manuals. Now, are there other Bible examples of people who invest in others in this way? To which the answer to that question is, of course, yes, there are. So here's another just a little bit of involvement for you. Again, you can use the Q&A. And it would be great if you could do that just now. And what other people in the Bible, what other pairs of people really do you see having this kind of coaching, this sort of mentoring response? Just take a minute to think about some pairs of people. Right, you've all got exactly the same people that I would have come up with. So people like Moses and Joshua. I'm just writing a commentary on Numbers. And the relationship with Moses and Joshua is a very interesting one. So it's a great example, Moses and Joshua. Saul and Samuel, I think that's exactly right. Elijah, Elisha, lot of people have come up with that. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. David and Solomon, yes, perhaps so, especially if you were to read through some of the things that David had to write to Solomon. I think you could look at Solomon and those who came after him, if you were to look at the Proverbs. I think all of those are good answers. Moses and his father-in-law, that's right, Jethro, another great example. All those sorts of things. Now, what are we talking about? Andrea, perhaps this answers your question. We're not just talking about discipleship. I think there... Coaching is a big word, and at any one time it might include discipleship, it might include training, it might include some kind of instruction, it might include listening. We'll come to some tools a bit later on, but just to answer your question as we're going, Andrea, I think what we're just saying is coaching is helping someone get from A to B, and how much of these other areas it involves depends on the nature of the relationship and the state of the relationship. So if you're starting with someone who's quite a young leader, it might look like discipling, it might look like training, but as it develops, those things might move out and coaching might take on a different form. It might be listening. It's basically investing in someone to help them realize their potential. Investing in someone to help them realize their potential. Now, it goes without saying, of course, that there is a danger in not coaching. This is a very famous picture, and for every picture like this, there are many others like it. We've missed out on the Olympics this year, which I'm slightly disappointed by. And I do like the relays. I do love the relays. I was lucky enough to go along to the 2012 Olympics. And the relays are quite fantastic. And there's always someone that drops the baton. There's always someone that dropped the baton. And once you drop the baton, things are over. The race is over. The chain is broken. And I think there's a great danger that we need to realize that if we don't invest in the next generation, if we don't see the need to be a gospel coach, there will be a danger that the baton is dropped. Will be a danger that baton is dropped. Sorry, I didn't mean to get rid of my slides there. I got a bit carried away. Let me just try and explain it like this. I told you I would come up with some better pictures later on, and here they are. So in any given generation, we have a responsibility, we've already seen that, to train up, and that means investing in, that means coaching a new generation. And notice that is not simply isolated. When Paul is writing to Timothy, he's not just saying, train up the next generation, invest in the next generation. No, he's saying, invest in the next generation so that they can invest in the next generation. Now, this little diagram may ask more questions than it answers in terms of should men be mentoring women. It's not meant to be like that. I'm just trying to show you the way that generations work. So we need to be investing in the next generation, which also means, by the way, allowing someone to invest in us. So if this is me here, I need to both be investing in the next generation, and also I need to be allowing someone to invest in me. And I think this is the thing that we often forget. Investing in the next generation means teaching them to invest in the next generation. In other words, I think part of being a gospel coach is teaching others how to be a gospel coach. So actually, one of the things that really struck me about Eric, do you remember I told you about Eric earlier? There he is. One of the things that really struck me about Eric's investment in me is that I want to go and do that for someone else. And I want that person to go and do it for someone else. One of the things I do as part of my job is that I go around seminaries in the UK. I work for a network of churches, about 630 churches, and one part of my portfolio is to look after training. And I go around those churches and I invest in those seminaries. I go around and I meet the principals, I talk to them about their curriculums and the things they're teaching. And one of the things that shocks me is that they don't spend any time teaching these young guys and women how to be coaches of others. I think they kind of think it's about, you know, coaching something that you do when you're 50 or when you're 60 and you want to pass things on to the next generation. But no, we need to teach people from a very young age how to train, how to coach, how to invest in the next generation so they can get from A to B. Now, I'd like to show you a model of coaching. I've borrowed it from someone else. It's not my own work, although I do amend it slightly. But before we get there, I'd just like to pause and ask for some questions. So we're about halfway through. So it's a good time to stop and say, let me try and ask some questions. Fidel, you've got a question about whether coaching, mentoring, discipleship, apprenticeship, what's the difference? Can they be used interchangeably? I think I've probably answered that now. I think coaching and mentoring are different from discipleship and apprenticeship. I tend to think discipleship is a relationship that happens in a church. I'm thinking about coaching and mentorship being about training leaders. Apprenticeship, I think, is a bit more focused towards a role. So in the business world, you would normally apprentice for a role. So I think discipleship has its own particular connotation. I think that's something that we all do. We all disciple one another. We all need to be discipled. We are all followers. That's what the word means, of Jesus. Apprenticeship, I think, is about training for a specific role. So I do see coaching and mentorship as having elements of those, but being slightly different, and actually being about training someone to be a leader, helping them to be a leader, releasing their potential. Should every believer be a gospel coach? Alex asks. The answer to that is yes and no. In its broadest sense, should every believer be helping other people to realize their potential? Yes. So we have a responsibility to one another. In this narrow sense that we're talking about here in terms of leaders, I don't think so. And the reality is not everybody can be. I think it is a gifting at some level. And some people are very, very good at leading. You've probably come across very good leaders, but they can't really explain what they're doing. They can't really communicate that to others, and they can't help others see how they should work. I've got a very good friend who's a fine, fine preacher, but he can't help other people preach, just doesn't know how to do it. And in fact, if he were to do it, you just end up preaching like him. You wouldn't be able to develop your own style. Whereas the coach would help him think about himself and see how it is that he can develop. So I think the answer to that question, Alex, is yes and no. So sorry about the sitting on the fence there, but I hope that makes sense. Danielle wants to know, what are the most important characteristics you look for in a potential mentee? I think, Danielle, I might answer that as we go, but if not, feel free to answer it again in just a moment. Ismail wants to know, what can you do when you don't have enough people to get the mentor role in church? If it's just you and another person, who can be a mentor? I think the answer to that, Ismail, is it's fine to go outside of church as long as the other people in church are happy with that. I don't see any problem with that. So we have systems in the UK, for example, where church planters who are often starting in very, very small environments are connected up with other experienced church planters so they can be coached. And that's not threatening to people in the church because they know it's there. So I think the answer is you can find ways. And Ismail, I'd even go a little bit further than that and say, I think there's actually great value in having a mentor or a coach who is not in the same setting as you, because they're more able to look at things objectively. So for example, I was mentoring a guy who was an elder in a church, and he was having difficulties with all his other elders. They simply weren't able to get on. There were all kinds of tensions. He wanted to work through that. He wanted someone to help him understand himself and develop. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. And if I'd been another one of those elders in the church, I couldn't have done that. That would have been impossible. So actually what I had to do is, because I was outside of that setting, I was able to be a help to him and to the others. Right. I want to show you a model for coaching now. And let me tell you, first of all, where I got this from, a book that I've found very, very useful. Let me see if I can find it. Did I download it? That's the question. I didn't download it. The book is on the sheet, actually. It's on the sheet that came with this with this seminar. The book is called, I can hold it up to the screen so you can see it. The book is called Gospel Coach. Whoops, looks a bit like that, Gospel Coach. It's by Scott Thomas and Tom Wood. And I've noticed when I was just looking this afternoon that there is a version in French. I couldn't find any other languages, but there is a version in French. So if you prefer to have a version in French, you can have it in French as well. So Gospel Coach I think it's called, in French, it's called Le Coaching Biblique. So it's not a particularly imaginative title, but it's a very, very practical book. And as I said earlier, it's also worth looking out for Bob Beale's book. Bob Beale's book isn't quite so spiritual as this. Bob Beale's book is a more practical book about coaching, very helpful book. It's more practical. Scott Thomas and Tom Wood are both pastors, and their book's very, very spiritual. And what they do is, first of all, they say, well, let's just look in the Bible at the role which is most like coach. Now, you've got to be a bit careful here, because we're picking bits out of the Bible that are for actually other situations. But they do have some great wisdom in them. So 1 Peter 5, 1 to 3 is where they start. Let me just read you these verses. 1 Peter 5, 1 to 3. To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's sufferings, who will also share in the glory to be revealed. Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them, not because you must, but because you're willing, and as God wants you to be, not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. And they pick four things out of that material, which they say, if you look into the life of Jesus, for example, if you look into the life of Paul, these are clear lessons for coaching. So this is their sort of broad model. They've got a detailed model, which we'll come to in a model moment. But this is their broad model. And by the way, these slides are in the app, so you can download them from the app. So you don't need to be scribbling around too much. So there are four elements to this model in broad terms. The first one is that it is about a reproducible example. What does that mean, a reproducible example? An example is something that someone else follows, and reproducible means that you can follow it and others can too. I think part of being a coach is sharing your life with the person you're trying to coach. Very often in the coaching material, there's a lot of emphasis on listening to the other person, understanding their situation, helping them work through their situation. And that's exactly right. That has to be the majority of what coaching is. But I think it also has to be you sharing your experience with them. So actually the stories that you tell as a coach to the person you're trying to coach have a really important place in your coaching. They mustn't dominate it and they mustn't take it over, but they have a really important place. If you think of the way that Jesus coached or Paul coached, that must be the case. So I'm going to relate all of these things back to my friend Eric. I guess he's been on my mind recently, because although he's very old and he's getting very weak, because he's been ill, I've been praying for him. And in fact, I was able to speak to him on the phone, which really cheered my heart to hear him on the phone. He'd been planning his funeral while he was in hospital with coronavirus. And he phoned me to ask me if I would preach at his funeral, which was very moving. But I thought about how all these things relate to him. So Eric used to tell me stories. He was retired as a pastor. He wasn't really pastoring anymore. But he would tell me stories of situations. They weren't all about how well he'd done. Often they were stories about how badly he'd done in certain situations. But he would tell me these stories. And for me, as someone being coached, I loved listening to those stories, because I wasn't with him at that time, but it made me feel like I was. And not only that, but it made me understand that actually a lot of the things I was going through, he'd been through similar things, a different context, different era. But it really made a big difference to me. So actually telling your own story as part of coaching is important. The only warning is, don't let it dominate. That's my exclamation mark. Don't let it dominate. Because coaching, of course, is not about you. It's about getting the person you're trying to coach from A to B. But it should involve you telling some of your story, sharing your life with that person. But it also is about recognizing your own limitations. I love the way that Peter writes in this little section. He calls people shepherds of God's flock, but then he reminds them at the end that there's a chief shepherd, Jesus. So they're only working under the guidance of Jesus. They need to know the kinds of people they are. And in fact, they are sinners themselves. That's why he has to warn them Do it because you're willing, he says. Don't pursue dishonest gain. Don't lord it over those entrusted to you. But Peter knows that those he is writing to are sinners and liable to sin. And as coaches, we have to be sure that we know our limitations. Now, our limitations may be limitations of experience. They may be limitations of knowledge. We need to be able to say to those we're coaching, I just don't know the answer to that. But perhaps we can meet up with someone who does. And actually, in that way, you will discover that coaching helps you develop as a leader as well. But we must recognize our own limitations. And also, it goes without saying, our own besetting sins and temptations. The third thing to say is that these two guys, Scott Thomas and Tom Wood, pull out of this passage is that coaching is about a relationship with someone immediate to you. That's the phrase they use, immediate to you. Now, they pick this up, obviously, in 1 Peter 5. It's about being shepherds of God's flock that is under your care. There is an immediate responsibility. And I find this a really helpful thought, that actually an effective mentoring relationship has to be someone with whom you have some connection. I don't think it can be entirely cold. I don't actually think it works very well if it's at a far geographic distance. Now, I realize that with the wonders of technology, there are ways to get around this, but I often get emails or calls from people who are in places halfway around the world saying, will you coach me? And I inevitably say, no, I'm afraid I won't. And the reason for that is if you're not able sometimes just to be able to get in the car and go and see the person, especially in an emergency, actually the coaching relationship is not quite as effective. Now, I appreciate there are ways around that, but I think that you need to have some kind of immediacy. It's why in the year-round mentoring that we run, and maybe I'll do the plug for year-round mentoring now. We, my colleague and I, John Stevens, run one of the year-round mentoring groups. There are many year-round mentoring groups, and please do have a look. You'd have been sent an email today just reminding you about them. And if you want to think about signing up for a year-round mentoring group, it's a really good thing to do. And we do some of that on webinars, but actually the core of it is being together. Is have a three-day conference in Barcelona, and we have one day at the ELF in Poland at the beginning of the year, one day at the end. And actually the webinars that we do, the online teaching that we do and investing is meaningless without that face-to-face contact. Now you can push back on that if you like in some of the questions, but my experience simply is that this is borne out what they say. There needs to be an immediacy. There also needs to be a proactivity in serving. So don't watch over them because you must, but because you're willing. And he then says, be eager to serve. I like those two ideas of being willing and being eager to serve. I think a good coach has to be both of those things. It has to be something that takes some of your time. That's the reality. If you can't coach, I don't think, 10 people well. You can't do it. You can't divide yourself in that way, even if you were a full-time coach. I don't see how you can be proactive and eager to serve 10 people in lots of different ways. So I think you have to work with just a few people, and I think you have to be proactive in serving them. Now, what does that look like in practice? This is my last slide we're coming to now, and this will prompt some questions. It's quite a busy slide, but don't forget it is in the app. So let's have a look at it. This again is the Thomas Wood model. And the Thomas Wood model is based around four words. Now, these four words aren't unique to them. In fact, these four words are taken from a book by Derek Prime and Alistair Begg called On Being a Pastor. And they are the essence, really, of what it means to shepherd. You would see them if you read through John 10 and you looked at the shepherding of Jesus. You would see exactly the same pattern. So there's nothing particularly radical about these four words. Let me just point them out to you so you can see them. The four words are know, feed, lead, and protect. Know, feed, lead, and protect. And what they do, Thomas and Wood, in this model is they break down each of those into different parts. They break them down into each into different parts. And I'm just going to quickly take you through these. This is their model for gospel coaching. I'm going to spend about 6 minutes doing this. I'm going to quickly rattle through them, then we'll have 10 minutes for questions. And I think these are a really helpful set of phrases. So, number one, know, relating personally. You have to get to know the individual and they have to get to know you. A coaching relationship is a personal relationship. It's not a relationship at a distance. For example, I think you need to know about their family. You need to know the pressures they're under at home. You need to know the kind of work they're doing. You need to know their gifts. You need to know the kinds of things they struggle with. You need to be careful about how personal you got. But actually, if you can't understand the whole person, you're not going to be able to help them get from A to B. You're not going to be able to help them realize their potential. I think key is this whole question of feeding. And it'd be easy to get to number four, which is, I guess, where most of the focus goes. But in fact, I think what you've got to do is begin at number two. Nourish with the truth means you've got to have a relationship where you're prepared to teach them truth. And they argue, Thomas Wood, that means basing what you do in the scriptures. Now, not every leadership is found in the scriptures, but there are lots of principles. And so I think you do want to base a relationship on the gospel of grace and truth. And as part of that, number three, you do always want to be pointing people towards Jesus. He is the chief shepherd. And so it's good to acknowledge that he's the chief shepherd, and it's good to acknowledge that we want to point people towards him. But also we want to be thinking about exactly what the people's needs are that we're coaching. That is a function, I think, of relating to them personally. We want to be able to understand the situation they're in. We want to be able to understand where we can help. And that means equipping in needs. They then break it down and have 3 points to do with leading. And these are the three things. You can see them. I've written them on there on the screen. First of all, investing sacrificially. Coaching someone actually is quite a demanding thing to do. It's not casual. I think if you're going to coach someone, you have to commit not only to spending some time with them, but you have to commit to praying for them. You have to commit to being there for them when they need you. And that might be, it rather depends on the nature of the relationship. If they're just starting out as a leader, it might be more onerous than perhaps if they've been a leader 30 years. But either way, it means putting something of yourself aside in order to invest in them. Number six, I don't like this phrase. This is not my phrase. This is from their model. Overseeing every aspect of a person's life. I don't like that phrase, overseeing, because I don't think a coach is responsible for overseeing someone. I think that smacks too much of directing, of heavy shepherding. I don't think that's our responsibility. I think people in these contexts have to be responsible for themselves under God. Secondly, they're responsible to their pastor in the local church, their boss, if they work in a Christian ministry. So I think that question, overseeing, I don't think is overly helpful. I think a much better phrase is involved. Involved. So let me use that instead. Or interested would be even better. So I think the gospel coach recognizes that people are whole people. So, for example, I said I would talk a little bit about Eric. Let me tell you about Eric. You know, he was interested in what life was like for me as a parent. He was interested in what life was like for me as the child of two non-believers. Neither of my parents are Christians, and that raised certain tensions. My brother and sister are not Christians, raised certain tensions. And he was interested in how my life related to them and how that affected how I preached and how I passed in the church. And so I think we need to be interested as those who are called to coach in every aspect of a person's life. And so as I say, I don't like that word overseeing, let's scrub that, but certainly interested in. And then I think we need to be those who are depending on the Spirit for an element of discernment. We need to be guiding, this is the phrase they use, guiding with Spirit-empowered discernment. I find that a really little helpful reminder. There are some things that we're not going to be able to work out because we've read a book. We're going to have to be asking the Spirit for help, and we're going to have to be putting that help into practice. And I'm amazed in coaching sessions that I've had with people how much help the Spirit gives. I think it's an extraordinary thing. And sometimes really beyond yourself, you come out of a coaching session, you've had a phone call with someone, or you've met up with someone for a coffee, and you think to yourself, I don't know where that came from. And the answer is, well, I know where it came from. It came from the Spirit's empowerment. So it is a spiritual process that's going on, not simply a business process. It's a spiritual process. But as part of that, we need to protect the person we're coaching. We do have their interests at heart. Well, what does that mean? Sorry, my ticks tailed off there. Let me just include them in. What does that mean? I think it means that we are to display compassion. I love the way that Jesus displays compassion to those who are following him. He doesn't break off a bruised reed. Isn't that a wonderful picture? And we must be those who display compassion to others. Those we're coaching will have struggles. They will have sins, just as we have sins. There will be things that they find particularly tricky to deal with. And we've got to be those who are kind and caring. How do we comfort them? Well, I think we comfort them with the hope of the gospel. This perhaps is bringing us back full circle over here, nourishing with the truth, inspiring towards Jesus. So as we encourage those, especially if they're broken or they find it difficult, I think we need to be doing that by comforting with them the hope of the gospel. And we need to be on their side. By the way, being on their side means that sometimes we will need to say some difficult things, but we do need to be on their side. Now, I'd recommend that as a book. You can pick it up and see that model. There's a lot more detail there. In fact, there's so much detail there, it can be a little bit overwhelming, that book. But I hope that's just a useful introduction to how to be a gospel coach. Now, there are lots of questions coming in. I want to try and answer as many of them as I can. I won't be able to answer them all, I'm afraid, because there are 60 questions. So I'm going to have a go and just deal with some of the practicalities in the last 10 minutes. Let me just take a sip of water. So, Neil, let's come back to your question, because I promise it would. If this isn't in place in your church, how can you go about asking someone else to invest in you? I think the simple answer, Neil, is it's good just to approach someone. I think my experience is that most people are really quite encouraged to be asked to invest in someone. And I think you have to dip a toe in the water and see whether it works or not. So in the secular coaching manuals that you'll find, the advice very much is you meet up for a couple of times, you try and work out between you how it's going to work. I'll come back to that in a moment, because I think, Jeff, that answers your question as well. You try and work out between you how it's going to work, and you give it a go. And if it doesn't work for either of you, if one person doesn't really click with another, or if you can't offer the time that the other person needs, or if you're trying to be too interfering and they find that difficult, whatever it may be, you just leave it and you say, right, it hasn't worked, that's fine. So I think part of creating this culture actually is just asking someone, but being also able to say to them, if it doesn't work, let's not worry, let's move on, and for that to be fine. And Dana, I think that answers your question as well, in terms of how long do you coach a person. I told you about my relationship with Eric, which went on 10, 11 years. That's quite unusual. I think as you develop through different stages of leadership, it's useful to have some other inputs. I think a good timeline to start out with is a year. To say, I don't mind spending a year investing in you, and let's see how it goes. We can walk away from it if we need to, but let's go for it for a year. If you really click, then it may become a lifelong relationship. But on the whole, I'm quite nervous about those kinds of relationships, because I think it's very easy to start exercising a coercion, a control that actually are that really becomes really unhealthy. And just touching on that as well, Jeff and Lauren wanted to know, does it need to be defined or can it be informally understood? The answer to that, guys, is entirely up to you. It's entirely up to you. I think it rather depends on your age and stage. I think the younger you are, the more useful it is to define it. The older you are, the more useful it is for it to be informal. That's my kind of little rule, but that's just what works for me. I think as I've got older, those who I ask to invest in my life, that the relationships we have are much more informal. But I think as I've as I was younger, I appreciated a more structured approach. So a little bit of both. Evelyn wants to know, what if a church leader doesn't see himself as a coach? I think we've partly answered that already, which I think is, I think you just have to, if you're looking for someone to coach you, I think you have to, with permission, go somewhere else. Don't undermine the church leader, but go somewhere else. So, for example, if you're working as an assistant to someone, you could get help from someone else outside the organisation. I think, though, if you are a church leader yourself and you don't see yourself as a coach, I think you're probably doing yourself down a bit. I think it is a part of, it's a key part of leadership. And actually, you just need to find a way of doing it that works for you. So as I say, I don't think Eric would have seen himself as a coach, but actually he simply invested time and interest in me and therefore made a real difference, which I think was really helpful for me. Piers, you want to know, what are some of the ways for a coach to initiate the coaching relationship? As I said already, I think it's you just have to approach people. But I would say before you do that, sit down and work out what you're hoping to get from the relationship. So I think I'm answering the wrong question, aren't I? What are some ways for a coach to initiate a coaching relationship? Thank you. Forgive me for answering the wrong question. This is the answer to that question. I think probably for you to approach someone, you've got to be a little bit careful, haven't you? Because it rather looks as though you're sort of saying, you know, I've got all this wisdom and I'm going to pass it on to you. It sort of, the danger is you create this, you create this environment of you being a superior person from the start, which isn't what coaching is about. So I think the ways for a coach to initiate the coaching relationship is to get some training. You could perhaps read this book. There are lots of courses you could go on. And then I think I would make people in your circle or people perhaps in your church aware that you are available to coach. I think it's best to let someone approach you unless you can really see there's someone, no one else is investing in this guy. I could do that. I've done that once or twice. You could say to them, you know, would it be useful if we spend a bit of time together? You can do it in a way that doesn't sound superior and kind of domineering. Andy Patterson, directive, reflective, or both? Well, if you want to know what those words mean, the answer, if you don't know what those words mean, you have to go and look them up. The answer is both, pretty sure about that. I think the best coaching is rounded and makes use of all the techniques that are available. I realize we've only scratched the surface, and in a sense, in this kind of online webinar, that's all we can do. I just want to really fire you up to think, I can do this, and this would make a difference to someone. And also, if you aren't being coached at the moment, perhaps as someone that you could approach to invest in you, that would be a really useful thing to do. Thank you very much for joining me, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the ELF. Thank you very much.